The following content has been provided by New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. For more information, visit us online at www.nsa.edu.
Hear the world calling, but some don't listen. They're only trying to drag you back into prison, that's right.
Welcome back to another sunny day on What Have You. I'm Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
And we gather together once more to...
In the car.
Force out a podcast.
We basically stopped getting further afield than Rachel's front yard.
We don't even buy coffees anymore. No. We just sort of, if there's a beverage on hand, that's how fancy this outing is.
We're parked in front of her driveway.
Today I told Shadrach, though, you can't come ask me a question. Just hot tip. It's hard for him to know that that could be the case, that you don't come talk to mom right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, surely she's available. She's open 24/7. I always have a question.
I know. I feel like last week, didn't you go kind of blank?
Yeah, I did, because I was gesturing at him for a minute. Like, wait, Chad, I'll tell you about that later.
Usually they
ask if they could have it. He's like, wants to know if he could have an apple. But he's the man of real questions. Last night, some of the questions we got from him is, what does the electricity place do? He was like, with all the wires. Like, it was like one of those places on the side of, you know how by the Troy Highway? It's like chain link. That's what it, and like, I don't even know the name of it. It's like, it's not a power plant. It's just one of those places where there's all these wires and transformers
and stuff.
I think the kind
of place that has like danger.
Well, it's what I would call the electricity place. Yeah. And he's like, what does it do there? I'm like, So we wanted a week binge. This was a little while ago, but of needing to talk about cannibals 24/7 with him. And
see, he's four, right? And
he's four.
I have said this before, but Dorothy Sayers and her, you know, breaking down the child's
four-year-old.
I feel like she missed philosophical, which comes at four. Mm. I feel like four years old, I remember having to get into, but why did God harden Pharaoh's heart?
Yes. It's like, but I need the big answers.
Yeah, and I loved, like, trying to limited vocab, huge concepts. Mm-hmm. Let's walk through predestination and free will, and how do we reconcile
and let's
the
do
two
it in a way that will satisfy my four-year-old.
And then Knox would be like, but if God hardened Pharaoh's heart, why did Pharaoh get in trouble?
And you're like, hang on
right
now. Hang on now.
Let's go through Romans 9, shall we?
Like, well, let me teach the world to you, my son. So Shad was asking about cannibals. I'm not actually sure why he was asking about cannibals. I can't remember the initial thing. It was about a missionary, I'm pretty sure. You know, it was something. And he was like, but that doesn't exist still, does it, Mom? And I'm like, yeah. Like, we're talking about it. Like, yeah. But it ended up being a really fun, you know, fun thing that we were talking about real darkness in places and say, how do you get rid of the darkness? And it was like only with light, like that Jesus is the light of the world. And this is how, when there's really terrible, scary places. And then, I showed him the Peace Child, the 50 years after the Peace Child video, like the whole video about them all being headhunters. And which, if you have not seen that, YouTube, 50 years after Peace Child, such a good video of him going back to the tribes that used to be headhunting all the time, and then now there's a ton of old people because they no longer are killing each other all the time.
Wow.
They have old people for the first time. They're all like, there's a baptism in the video of a ton of people being baptized, and it's just so obvious.
That's
transformation.
Awesome.
And he really got that, like, but he needed the answers about how did this happen in the first place.
Yeah.
How does it quit? Why is it still happening?
Yeah.
We're talking about the Great Commission. We got to cover the waterfront. And then right after that, he found a book about World War II or something. One day he's like, Mom, would you tell me the rest of World War II? It's like, Where did I leave off last time? And then he's like, how can you tell who's a bad guy? Is it their helmets? And I was like, no. And
occasionally,
then,
yes.
And then he's like, are American soldiers good guys or bad guys? I'm like, well, some of each, some of each.
And we had this moment where we were visiting friends in Amsterdam. And so the kids were all little. And we ended up going to, now, of course, I can't remember her name. Anne Frank's house.
But I can remember.
But we didn't know that that was really on the agenda for the day. Right. Like, we were just visiting. We were in Amsterdam. Well, they didn't live in Amsterdam. They took us to Amsterdam for the day. And so one of the things we did was go to Anne Frank's house. And so we get in there. And I hadn't prepared the kids. We hadn't really ever talked about the Holocaust just yet with all of them.
And all of a sudden, you're like, hang tight now, kids.
And the thing that was really funny was trying to do that in a whisper. With those kinds of questions. So we're in, there's crowds. You can't be like talking loudly. It was dark. They had big photos on the walls of the concentration camps and stuff. So whatever child it was, you know, little, is going, why are all those people laying down? And so we're in a whisper. Yeah, it's bad. And they'd be like,
we'll talk later.
Why would the Germans, you know? And you're like, okay, well, because, and they'd say, so the Jews were the Christians then. And we're like, Jews aren't Christians. So they're so the Jews are the bad guys. No, Jews aren't the bad guys. But and you're trying to do this in this whispering, like, so the Germans are the Christians, and you're like,
no.
Yes. Well, technically, and it's
complicated. It's like, that's why we brought you to this museum.
They may have all been Lutherans, but that doesn't actually mean.
But this is the difference between the visible church and the invisible church. And I'd like to talk to you more about that some other time.
And just because the Jews aren't Christians doesn't mean that they should have been killed.
We're driving. Oh, speaking of the Jews, and just because they weren't doing well doesn't mean that. I had the other day I'm driving, all the kids packed in the back. They've been talking a lot. And it became apparent when I suddenly clued in that I had not been paying attention to what they were talking about. You know, like, they were just all talking. I was driving. Yeah. My mind was elsewhere. And then I suddenly hear, no, Blair, don't say that. You should not say that. And I was like, what? What's happening? You know, like, why is someone? And really made me laugh. Blair is my 7-year-old. So the follow-up. I suddenly tune in to No Blair, You Should Not Say That. And then it was because even though the Jews had a lot of problems, it was super wicked of them to make them eat pork. And I was like, what? Like, and they were like, it was in the intertestamental period. Yeah, this is what I hear from the back of the car.
And it's like, Blair, the Seleucid dynasty. No.
I was like, I have to explain this to you, Blair. Stop, Blair. Stop saying it was good they made the meat pork.
Let's talk about Antiochus Epiphanes.
Yes, that's what they were. That's what it was. Let me tell you some more about the abomination of desolation. And I was like, wow, heady topics for the back of the car. I should tune in more often.
I know.
For this.
Keeping fresh on your history.
Yeah, nothing like kids to keep you really. And the other thing is telling them Bible stories. It is a really weird mental thing where you realize when you read a Bible story, it's so, so familiar that you don't notice how much of it you don't know.
Yeah.
But when you go to tell it, you're like, I can't remember the order that these events happened in. Like, I would know it if someone else said it and it was wrong. Right. I would probably notice it. But it's like a mental lapse.
Or even you just start noticing it yourself. It makes you think about it yourself in a different way when you have to put it
But
in
I have
words.
To go open up the Bible and look at the story, because I start wondering, when you're putting it in words, you start wondering, you start being like, is that the case, or did I fill that in myself? Like, did I assume that happened? Or, you know...
Yeah.
Because I actually just had this with my kids are reading Daniel, and one of them said something. Of course, I haven't looked at it to confirm this, but they were questioning me. It was like someone said there at the beginning, and they said, is this the book that has Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? And I was like, oh, yeah, it is. And they were like, well, how did they know Daniel? And I was like, oh, well, Daniel is who introduced them to... I was saying Daniel is how they became known, wasn't he?
Like I don't think so.
I thought so. I thought it was like because he somehow.
No. Now we're going to have to pull out a phone app.
I just brought this on the podcast to show you all. But then I had kids being like, no, they lived in Babylon. And I was like, yes, I know. But I thought that the reason that they came, they became like overseers, right? Is this not the case?
I think you might be filling in some gaps there.
That's my point, though. My point is that you're like, you read it and it's familiar. And then when you go to tell it to people, you're like, hang on. This is, I don't know. I find this tricksy. Do you know all the ins and outs with Haman and what happened next? You know, how many feasts were laid in order?
Yeah.
I don't know, it's tricky.
No. So, aside from having big philosophical talks with Shad, what else have you been up to?
And finding out what I don't know about the Bible.
Right.
What else have I been up to?
Yeah, what have you been
doing
amongst
yourself? I actually gave myself last night I threw two large pottery things, which I have not done before with that much. Well, no, I've not successfully done it with that much clay.
Okay.
That was fun. A big serving dish.
Have you fired them? No, you'd have to dry.
But the funny part is that when I stood up, like, my legs were tight, and my arms were tight, and my back, it was like probably all of these very obscure muscles that you don't normally do anything with. Like, because centering that much clay takes a lot of, like, I think I was even holding my breath trying to center it, you know, because you're like trying to lock down this piece of clay that's like the size of a coffee can.
Right.
You know, and it when it gets a hip swivel going.
You got a muscle.
You're like wrestling this large piece of clay as it's like spinning around. So that was a fun thing to do, though. I was glad. I've lately only done mugs and stuff that was little because of, you know. Yes, but also just because we didn't have that much clay on hand, but also because I just wanted to keep doing the same thing and get consistent results at the same thing. And that so it was fun to switch. I made a big, cool bowl, but my husband has much bigger hands and much better strength at this kind of thing than me. So, meanwhile, he's throwing these bowls that are, like, ginormous. Like, what I was really pleased with was much smaller than
medium
what
size.
He's doing, yeah.
That's very
fun. But I made it shallower and wider, like a better serving dish. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you had like a finished pasta dish or something, mm-hmm. you don't want to serve it in a deep bowl.
Right. Well, I really want to do more slip casting. I would really like to do it this summer. I enjoyed that a lot. The problem is I would like to get good at making the original piece that you make a mold of, because so far you just kind of have to find a thing that's the right shape and make a mold of it. And so that was fun the first time, but I would really like to design it and then make a mold and then do the slip casting. That's the thing I would really like to do, but I think
throw it or like slab build it.
Well, I think the way they do it is make it out of like an MDF with a lathe.
Oh,
you know, where you design it.
Well, you don't have to, you could do it out of anything.
But I was trying to think, I know, but I was thinking with clay, it would be so dense that it would take like a year to dry. I don't know, like, you know, like if you're doing something this big.
Well, I think traditionally people would have just thrown the item.
Oh, yeah, but
you're talking about sculpting clay to make.
No, I'm talking about sculpting MDF with a lathe to make it.
Do you have
what
a lathe?
I wanted? No, I don't. This is.
I would like to see you try to just wield a lathe. The thing, here's the thing.
I think
it's probably
somebody.
A lot like a potter's wheel, because I bet you anything that
it just spins and it has the blade that you know, like you have. I think people we shouldn't be talking about this. Why are we talking about this?
No, here's
layering
what I'm
trying MDF
to say.
With glue and then
like
putting
like,
it on a lathe.
It's
and
kind of like making a wood hero.
Basically, yeah, but
lamb
then,
and then.
Yeah, but then it's solid all the way through. And then, of course, the slip is what makes it hollow, but. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So you've been casting pots.
Nope.
Yes, you have. Not casting. Throwing. You've been throwing pots.
Yes.
I have to leave in the morning to go to Pittsburgh for the ACCS conference. And, look who forgot to turn the ringer off.
That's my ringtone, guys. That's my ringtone.
But
a number I don't recognize.
So I'm going to ACCS tomorrow, and I have to speak in a workshop on Friday. And so that's happening. But then that evening, this is where my life gets complicated. I have to host a party of sorts in another city in a hotel suite that I've not seen before. And obviously I can't bring along with me. Oh, they're handing out a lot of invitations for this. I think it's for a party for about 100 people. But I have to do this from across the country. So that's what my planning is
right
in that phase right now. Like, what do I need to throw in my suitcase so that I have it? And what do I need to put on my list for things to try to find in Pittsburgh?
I feel like you should find Costco would be helpful, but also Trader Joe's, I bet, because they...
Oh, yeah, and I'm not worried about the food, because, of course, we can find a grocery store somewhere. It's just mostly, like, and then prepping, whatever it
well,
is. I'm going to have to prep
it
all.
See now if you can borrow a lathe in Pittsburgh and
yes,
make and a centerpiece
I'll
out of
come
MDF.
With MDF.
And you will be so more
I'll
educated when you come
I'll
home.
I'll be blessed to have done that.
Yeah, that'll work.
Anyway, so I'm thinking, right, what do I need to have on hand? Like, I'll bring, I don't know. So that's my little conundrum for the afternoon is what mm-hmm. do I put in my suitcase if I'm going to have a party for 100 in another city?
My conundrum today is that we are actually going to go to the river today.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should do that.
Rachel's going to go to the river today, and I bet you they're not going to Merkle it. I bet they're going to just have a nice little...
Well, our plan is to specifically not Merkle it. our plan is to go and come back in relative expected times.
You know what, though? Our sheetrocker at our house. It's amazing what somebody who's good at their job... It's amazing. It's like, gosh.
I told the kids because you guys were gone coming home late. I was like, so for Father's Day, you've got to find something that you could do that would be a gag about the sheetrock.
You told my children this?
Yeah. It's like a Father's Day gag about what was happening with the sheetrock. But apparently they didn't think of anything.
No, they didn't. But
so,
it's amazing. It's just
I feel like
so
we
exciting.
Should tell about Grandpa because that was so cute.
Sure.
So my Grandpa Jim is a... Limerick writer.
He always just put a limerick in birthday cards.
Oh, like
kids.
Your wedding card, we would get a limerick in it.
He
dusts out a limerick for many occasions.
He wrote me an awesome letter for my wedding.
I have a lot of really great letters from him too, but he always, he and Grandma Bessie were, they do the same where I have like a letter when Lena was born, like a letter to Lena saying, mm-hmm. you may not remember us when you are.
Oh,
like those just
letter.
Choked me up so bad. He's always saying, it's basically like, this is what I want you to know, even mm-hmm. though you may not remember us, but luckily she will remember him. Anyways, he writes limericks a lot. And so for Father's Day, we were just getting together. It was my dad's birthday and Father's Day. So, but Grandpa was, somebody's going to bring Grandpa. So we were like, well, he can't be at a thing with, you know, all of these descendants and not have a gift. But he's not easy to shop for.
No.
He's not someone that needs a lot of stuff right now. So we decided to all write limericks for mm-hmm. Grandpa. So I picked up a card, and then all of the family were off writing limericks. And I called, the Merkles were on the road, so I called them and they...
We wrote up a limerick
they
real
wrote
fast.
They wrote a limerick... I just discovered it's like a hot day and I just realized that my seat heater was on. That's
no doubt a leftover from earlier this morning.
Put me out of fellowship with this. I was like, man, it's getting so hot in here. So anyways, but everybody wrote a limerick. Well, I don't know how many people wrote a limerick, but quite a lot because it was Luke and I did one and then all of our kids mostly did them and then... the Wilson kids, so that's five more kids, and your kids, the five mm-hmm. kids did it, and then Mom and Dad, and then Gordon and Meredith, and Little Heather, and Mallory and Caleb, it seemed like 20 limericks all on postcards in his card, and then the awesomest part is that as he rolled in, as they brought him in, he's in a wheelchair, and as the guys carried him upstairs and put him down, like, first thing, he's like... Everyone, I need your attention. Like, I have a limerick to read for Dad's birthday. So he arrived with a limerick to his own limerick party. But then
went home with 20 limericks.
Yeah, but then Dad read them all aloud. And then for him, like, he read them aloud. And then Grandpa said, well, I can die a happy man. A glut of limericks
what
in his
honor.
What
was your limerick? Tell me your limerick.
Oh, I'll see if I can remember it. We intentionally blew the form at the end, which made us laugh.
Oh, okay.
So we said, let's see. There once was a house on Howard through whose doors many souls shuffled and cowered. It was something about, it's about in that, hang on, give me a second to think of it. Something about an abundance of grace they found in that place and a missionary biography for the road.
Ours
something
was, okay,
like that.
Here was ours. There
oh,
once
yeah, you
was
have yours in a, co-
in my
a copy.
Phone.
Yeah.
There once was a fellow who taught on bitterness rather a lot. He stuck to the text, and whatever came next, the implications were often too hot.
I
like,
love
that's
it.
So funny.
We just get a kick out of Grandpa's. The most fun part of it to me was that I was like, this is the perfect legacy, is that everywhere you went in the house, someone was writing a limerick.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, real quick, like, Titus in the hall writing on a piece of paper up against the wall, and then people consulting and laughing and writing everywhere. I thought that was a real legacy, that somehow he turned out a whole family who would be like, yeah, limerick, I'll do that. I can handle
it's
a limerick.
It's Grandpa's love language.
It is. Limericks are like...
So what should we talk about, though? This is, we were talking earlier about lurching off the subject of limericks.
Uh-huh.
About the vital importance, not of being earnest. I feel like I should say that. The vital importance of being earnest.
Yeah. Vital.
No, but of hearing both sides of the story. Like,
yes.
In basically every department
of life.
No, I would
say one thing is... Or if there's no way for you to hear the other side of the story,
then reserve
to always assume
judgment.
There is another side of the story.
Yeah, or just don't get dogmatic. So even, like, I feel like how often when we were children, for instance, and we would
when
be
we
sent into the bedroom for discipline purposes.
Go wait
we would,
on
Mom
my
would
bed.
Always, and this is a side note, but it was always great. This was such a great example because it meant that this is what we always did, too. But I remember being sent to the bedroom, and Mom would wait a few minutes before she came in, and it was so that she could have her heart right, so that she wasn't disciplining.
She was never coming in the wrath.
She wanted to come in impartially.
Isn't
so,
that James?
You know,
the wrath of man
does not
produce
the
righteousness
of God. I always felt like you needed that written
got
on
some,
your paddle.
Yeah, if you've got some wrath brouhaha-ing somewhere, you will not produce the righteousness of God.
In another person. Anyway,
yeah.
So I remember sitting in there, you know, sitting in the bedroom waiting. And the thing that was always noteworthy was that she always gave us an opportunity for the defense. Or Dad, you know. So they would come in and say, why don't you tell me your side.
Right.
Because whatever it was, you know that feeling if you're getting called on something, you want the opportunity to give your side.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I'm sure it was not at all applicable. But if there was another piece to the story that they didn't know about, they wanted to hear it before, before taking action. And so, like, I just think it's hugely important raising children not to jump on one, land on one, scold one until you actually have...
Right.
Heard both sides of the story or given a chance for the defense. But we were talking about this with regards to friends who tell you things about their husband or their
right.
children.
Well, I actually think that Christians should be just really, really good at the lost art of imagining the other side.
Yeah.
Like, and typically that happens when something happens to you. Like, I don't know why that person did that, but maybe this was a really difficult day for them. And this
right.
was not about, you know, like basically not taking offense, not
uh-huh.
whatever. And just being slow to react, like just
right.
not being, I tell my kids all the time, it's like a thing that we have in our house. Cause we have a fireplace. So if they ever like have seen us throw like tissue paper from a gift or something in
mm-hmm.
the fireplace, how fast that lights up. And so we will talk about, we say, we don't want you to be like a big wad of Kleenex fluffed up on the floor where any spark that comes near will alight and up will go ablaze. We're like, my goal is for you to be like the big, wet, mossy logs where sparks go to die. Like, where the spark brigade comes through and nothing happens. Like, it's just like, oh, you cannot.
So true.
And part of it's like being slow to wrath. Like, just not being someone who was like, he said what? Like, I mean, and also a lot of it is a really bad instinct for counseling. If someone comes and brings a grievance to you, they are only telling you one side of the story, and they are also the only party that you have any access to.
Yep.
So why would you try to give them counsel of how bad what the other person did was? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, let me reinforce your narrative, and let me just...
Yeah.
And obviously, I always feel like we have to throw in these disclaimers. We're not talking about things where you should just call the police immediately or something when it's a really heavy accusation.
Point is that when you only hear one side of it, you don't know. Like, you actually don't know the context. You haven't heard the other side. And so it's just the like, okay, well, I'll just reserve judgment. I'm not going to jump in with a, oh my gosh, that's the most horrible thing.
Or you just can ask some clarifying questions. Or you can, sometimes, if someone brings something to you, I think it's super wise to say, I'm going to think about that. And I'll get back to you with some follow-up. Because by expanding the time zone for how you're going to deal with it, it allows for more time to explore the question in the first place. Like, okay, you know, I had a question. Is this something, you know?
But also, I think that the same thing, we're just talking about, like, reserving your own judgment. And you can just say, well, I think that that's a really bad situation. Mm-hmm. But I also am going to just acknowledge to myself that I don't have all the facts. So I need to hold that loosely. You know, you can have an opinion, but just say, but I'm willing to be proved wrong if something else shows up.
Right.
Because that's the thing is we get our, women easily enter into stuff like that emotionally, where we get angry on behalf of somebody else.
Right.
We get sad on behalf of somebody else. And then you're not willing to let go of that if other evidence comes to light.
No, because you're actually already in an emotional state about it.
You're invested.
So you're like already mad at the guy before you hear his side. So why would you...
Right. And so the thing is like, maybe it is awful. It might be awful. Maybe it's not awful. Maybe somebody was having a fussy afternoon and then, you know, like it could be anything, but also the ability to just wait and hear the other side of the story. I think, gosh, does the internet not provide multiple opportunities to practice this very thing where you read some inflammatory news article about the big bad thing that the cop did or the big bad thing that the person did to the cop, whatever it is. And it's emotionally charged, it's politically charged, and we all know where our loyalties are going to be immediately without having seen really any more evidence about it, without having seen both sides of the story, without knowing anything except one person's take. And then, why is it now really hot? What's happening?
I don't know. I'm struggling here with the...
No, this is... Oh, it's because you turned it on to feet. See? And defrost. Rachel's fiddling with the... See? There we
Rachel's the worst.
Rachel is twiddling with dials. No, but you know what I mean? Like, hearing both sides of the story with your children, with your husband, with the internet, with your friends.
Well, and the internet, I'm just going to say, here's my hot tip for Christian women on the internet. Is... You don't actually have that much capacity for emotion. So let's just, this reminds me of, I want to say it was it Dabney who said this about novels?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember who it was.
I think it was Dabney. But anyways, he was talking about the dangers of novels. And but he was saying that God gave us emotions to drive action. And that when we feel sorry for someone, it's like we feel sorry for them, so we go take them a meal. We feel concerned for someone, so we are driven to prayer for them.
Yeah.
We concern, and I feel like a lot of Christian emotion and action has been replaced by basically the gaper's delay of the internet.
Yeah.
Like, where people are like, read this horrifying article about how a transgendered man and his transgendered child are doing something sick in Canada. And I'm like... I can't imagine that this is relevant for my life in any way. And that the emotion that would be ginned up in reading that article,
has nowhere
which
to go.
Would be anger, would have nowhere to go because it would not be a... It's like, it's not in my back. It's not something that is right here. And so you think about that when it is like, read this tale of medical tragedy from New Hampshire today. And you're like, I actually need to be caring for the people in my life who are here,
right,
who need me to be focused on their needs, which are not as great as the dying husband in New Hampshire.
And the thing is, like, I think that the point is a really profound one, that emotion is meant to move you to action.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's impossible. Like, I don't have a problem with story, you know, because, but we do think story is very effective, because by causing those emotions, mm-hmm, it's shaping your loyalties, and right, it's shaping. And so even if it doesn't have an outlet in that exact moment, it is shaping how you will react when confronted with it in real life. And so that's why it's important to be, to act like a Christian, even when you're just reading your Facebook feed.
Yeah.
Because it's shaping you. It's shaping how you react.
Right, and I think that this quote I was talking about, he was arguing against, like, the French novels of the time, which I think were kind of, like, Harlequin romances.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty.
Like, it was a lot of, I think it was trashy novels, and this was before movies.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I'm just mean, that Christians should take some of the wisdom of that. I'm not saying I agreed with the whole moment, but the wisdom of the statement was kind of like, why do you think God wanted you to get used to not acting on your emotions? To not, like, when you fear for someone, you should be driven to constant prayer. Like, those emotions should take you somewhere, and they should motivate something. And I just think that that's an interesting, something to think about. And I just see it when I see people getting on different causes, like, where you're like, is there something that I can do? And I'm not saying that there's something wrong with political activism, or like, yeah, there's something I could do with this. But I just feel like I don't need to be whipping myself into a fevered wrath about the homeschoolers in Germany. Because, like, that could be a really hard time, and I hope that the Christians there are supporting them, or things are, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't see the way that my fervor here will do anything about it.
Yeah, and sometimes it is important to do things, you know,
beyond your own emotional interest. I agree with that. It's not at all.
But mostly what I'm saying is just that if you're training yourself through your immediate loyalty on your Facebook feed, like, you see something, you're just like, how dare he? I can't believe that disgusting cop would even ever think about. Yeah. If you do that, then
this is everything that's wrong in the world today is this one man. And
right. But if you're the kind of person who sees one story and you snap to judgment, and then you snap to publicly stating what you think about it, then you aren't being the kind of person that Proverbs tells us to be, which is hear both sides of the story.
And not being quick to anger.
And also one who meddles in a quarrel not his own.
Taking a passing dog by the ears. How often, I've thought that many times when I'm ready to whip off with a comment on something.
Yeah. And then you're like,
actually, that's not even my dog.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
That's what we, Luke and I laugh, we say, isn't that like a Polish proverb? Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah.
And we say that, we would say that often. Then we got tickled telling Dad, who is a pastor of many years, it's like, that's the trouble with pastors, is that for them, it's not my circus, not my monkeys, it's not my circus, some of my sheep. They're like, I do need to get involved in that circus to try to get some of the sheep out.
The thing is, though, is that like being somebody who waits to hear the other side, being somebody who reserves judgment, somebody who holds their judgments loosely until they have had two or three witnesses is what the Bible asks us to have.
Right.
And I like also the two or three.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes other times
and
three.
And this is something that's really interesting. That's the Bible standard. And this is why marriage is big problems. because fights in private, you will never have two or three witnesses.
Well, there's always two.
There's the kids.
No, there's two. There's,
I mean, if they're having counter testimony.
Yes.
They're, who's going to bring in the witnesses to what? Yeah. It's like,
but there were like two people problem. Who were there.
Right. I was going to say one other thing is what
one
you were
might
talking
be a
about.
False test. Yeah. Testimony. But
yeah. When you were talking about the cultivating a demeanor that is wise in that, I would take it even further back and say, before you hear your own story. Like, if you're feeling a little peeved at your husband for something, you can tell yourself, you can build a case and generate the arguments no problem with that. Like, if you want to spend your time doing the dishes, building all kinds of accusations that are one-sided against someone, you can't. But if you want to go, but if you want to be wise, what you do is not listen to those unsubstantiated charges. Like, you're like, you know what? I'm going to wait until I hear the other side of that story. You know, like, I'm going to find this out before I proceed.
And before I get all snappy at my husband about whatever, do the thing that mom did, which is wait and listen to the defense. You know, just wait and hear if there's an explanation before leaping off.
We often tell our kids, instead of saying, do you have something to defend yourself, we're often saying, I want you to tell me what you did wrong.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's a good, that's
we're
a
like,
good
you
tip.
May not mention anyone else's names.
Well, if you have two children squabbling and you weren't in the room, then you can come in and say, now, Fred.
Yeah. Fred. What did Fred do
Fred,
that was
you
not.
You tell me the whole story, but only what Fred did wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And then.
Zanzibar over here will tell me only his part.
And if we get those two and parts, it'll be, the whole story.
It'll be the whole story. Yeah. But I love how kids are, when our kids were little, this would always crack me up, because they would, when they would start to retell the story in the flesh, it would be like, and then I said to her, and then she screamed back. And then I quietly responded. And then she.
And then I was being totally fine. Like, it was like, were you angry?
But I always.
No.
Their
not
voice.
Me.
Their voice is very calm for my part. And well, then.
And then.
And also the ramped up vocab. She screamed. She threatened.
The vocabulary. She was being amazingly horrible. You're like, really?
And so that's why if somebody is, you know, airing their grievance in the flesh, that's how it comes off.
Yeah.
And so when you say, no, back up. Now you tell me everything you did wrong.
But what did you do in this circumstance that may have created this monster?
And if you say, okay, you tell me what you did wrong, you can turn to the other person and say, is that accurate? And they usually like, yeah. And it's like, now your turn. You tell me what you did wrong. Mm-hmm. Ask the other person, is that accurate?
One thing I've done with my kids who have the most trouble with each other, in just little bickery troubles, are usually the most alike.
Oh, like, isn't that the truth
and,
of the world?
And they are the ones who are like, as it happens in my home right now, it is the ones who are the most kind of high achiever, kind of, they love to be correct. They don't like to get things, like, those are the two that can just egg each other onto glory, like, in an amazing way. And it's so subtle. Nothing actually seems provoking, but somehow everyone is provoked. Well, one of the things that I have made them do, which makes me laugh, is I say I'm, like, making dinner. I'll be like, you two, come in here and stand in the kitchen. I'm like, face each other. And they're, like, 2 feet apart. I'm like, no, you have to stay there until I tell you that you can be done. And I want you to take turns going back and forth, complimenting one another. And so then I proceed with cooking dinner while they say, you're really good at drawing things. And then they go back to, like, you're really fun to play tag with. And it's like, goes back to, they have to do it until I tell them they've done enough. Yeah. So it's like the bottomless compliment.
That's
thing.
Funny.
But the thing that surprised me most about doing that is that it was kind of just off on a wing and a prayer of, like, we needed to work through some of this. And I just gave them that job. But the thing that was remarkable to me is how it revealed to me that I didn't understand before that moment how much it was because they were similar.
Alike.
Yeah. And then when it was coming out, the things that they admired about each other, when they were finally being honest about that, I realized that so much of the source of it was like when one says, you're really good at thus and such, and the other one is so flattered.
Yeah.
And I realized it was because they were both really fighting for respect of the other, because they admire each other a lot. Yeah. And they're like, we need, and it really helped them to actually have to give each other compliments, helped them both to know that they actually were admired.
And helps you to get a sort of behind the scenes glimpse into what's going on.
Yes.
You know, gives you an insight into it.
And you also can tell if someone is not sincerely enjoying their sibling when they're like, you know your colors.
It's funny how
like, nope, that's not it. You can do better.
Reveals the villain.
You can do better.
It?
You can.
Like,
yeah.
Oh,
one of them's like,
found the stink cloud.
One of them's like, you're always. I'm so glad you're my sister. And the other one's like, you
finished
have a bathrobe. Yeah. like, I see where the heart of the storm is. It's funny. But anyways, I liked that one. That's a technique that
hits. Anyway, that's our thing. It's like just practicing being the kind of person that doesn't get too easily scandalized or doesn't get too easily
just being a wet, mossy log on the internet.
Be a wet, mossy log in person.
If the internet can use anything, virtually, it is more unstartable fires.
Oh, man. It is the, like a...
The fires.
They need Smokey the Bear alerts all over the
internet. All over. Like, do not leave your cigarettes unattended.
Yeah.
Like, do and not actually, do.
You're not even allowed to start fires right now this month.
I got... Yes, I got so tickled by that. When you're talking to someone and what the conversation amounts to. Is basically like, what do you think about me leaving this cigarette butt of a rude comment in that emotional dry bush? You're like,
maybe not.
Follow me closely for 1 minute. Imagine what could be if you didn't. Like, the bush might still be dry, but you would not have started the great fire season of 2017. Like, might be awesome. If you didn't do that thing that you're talking about doing.
But anyway, okay, so recommend. We need to leave off now with a recommend of some sort.
Recommend.
How about, now since it's summery in our neck of the woods, what's your like, go-to summer meal? We promised a week or two ago that we would have settled into, like, oh, now the season's changed.
We were but children always said that. We didn't know. We did not know what it was going to be like. Well, tonight, since we're going to the river, we're doing really whatever I can rub.
Sure, but,
up.
Like, what's something that you guys like eating in the summertime?
Did you have a hot tip for this?
You were going to do it. I'm sure that you have something.
This was your idea. I'm sure I do make things, but I struggle.
Really? You still blanking out on this? Okay. No. I've got one that we adore.
Okay. Do it.
Caramelized pork tacos with a pineapple cucumber salsa. Okay. And it is not hard to make, and it is insanely good. And it has like a sriracha sauce that you squeeze over the top. And you just caramelize the pork. You like pan fry pieces of the pork. And then you throw some water and sugar in at the end. Some fish sauce, you know, kind of gives it that little bit of...
Yum.
Yeah.
Where is this recipe from?
I don't know, but I will post a link when we get around to it. Because it's really yummy. And the salsa is really quick to whip up. It's like red onions and pineapples and cucumbers. Right. And then you put the sriracha sauce on top, and that I think you cut it with sour cream. It's like, you know, it's like a sour cream and sriracha mix, and you put that on top. It is ridiculously good. It's easy. It's really fresh, and my kids are crazy for it.
Vietnamese chicken salad. It's really good. And then also there's another one. Your fish sauce reminded me of one, that Thai beef tacos is really good.
Oh,
it's like a grilled. It's marinated in like chili, you know, like sambalalek and fish sauce and stuff. Okay. And then it's, you do it with like a cabbage slaw.
Ooh, yum.
Like, but it's Thai.
So it's similar. It's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, it's Thai beef and slaw, but it is just
it's a
interesting
taco?
Different, yeah, taco.
All right, we have two taco
tacos
recommends.
And tacos?
Tacos and more tacos.
And then for breakfast, you can have a taco. Actually, breakfast tacos, what's really good is a couple of scrambled eggs in a corn tortilla with avocado and sriracha and sour cream. It's delicious.
Really?
Yeah.
I could see that.
I could go for a breakfast taco there. Like that. Yeah.
It does sound good.
It is good. So, thank you all for joining us. We'll
and
see you
we
next
will see
time.
See you around.
Yes. Bye. Happy summer days.
New St. Andrews College thanks you for listening.